There's a time and a place for filet of fish. But breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome a great privilege, Professor Nicholas Thomas, Professor of Historical Anthropology at the University of Cambridge, Director of the Cambridge Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology, to help me with his new book, Wonderful Story About the Pacific Rim Basin, where I've been several times in my life, ignorant of the questions I didn't know existed about where this wonderful culture came from that I visited in Hawaii, where it's going now in the 21st century, given its history. The new book is Voyagers, The Settlement of the Pacific. Professor, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much. Congratulations. And I take you to a moment in your explication of the vastness of this landscape called Oceania. This is, I believe, 1821. A missionary, John Williams, is deploying Christianity throughout the islands, the Cook Group, if I read correctly. And at one point, he comes across a chief, Rongo Matani, who offers to demonstrate to him how to sail to the next point where he wants to go. And herein lies the secret of the vast voyages across the Oceania. What do we need to know about what Rongo Matani told John Williams that he recorded so dutifully in the early 19th century? Good evening, Professor.
Good evening, and it's a pleasure to talk to you. And John Williams himself was actually a fascinating character. I mean, people often think missionaries must be narrow-minded, dogmatic, just out away from Europe to try to convert people. And John Williams was in some ways like that, but he was also somebody who had a great ability to build rapport with islands people in the Pacific. He listened to them. He was interested in what they had to say. He was interested in their knowledge. And this is really a case in point. He was in search of the largest island in the Cook Islands archipelago, Rarotonga. He had heard of it. He had heard of the population. He knew it was a great Pacific island society. And he was immensely eager to reach that island and see what he could do to persuade the inhabitants to adopt Christianity. He counted himself as an explorer as well as a missionary, but he had a deep awareness that he couldn't get to the places he wanted to visit without local aid and advice. And the particular trick, I guess, he picked up from Rongo Matane was that it really mattered where you departed from, so that in a European cartographic system, that's somewhat arbitrary. You trace your course from wherever your vessel happens to be located. But for navigators right across the Pacific, a departure point was critical, a particular point on an island where landmarks such as hills or even artificially raised markers like standing stones set the course. They enabled a direction. And so Williams understood that he had to take his ship to this particular point and orient it properly. And he was standing on the deck of the ship as it was sort of circled around. And at a certain point, the chief said, "This is right." And so at that point, in the middle of the day, they were pointing in the right direction, and they ventured out into what, so far as Williams knew, was open ocean. But by the time they had lost sight of land, by the time they'd lost sight of those landmarks, the stars were rising, and it was then possible for the Polynesian navigators on board to orient the vessel on the basis of the stars.
Yes, here is the magic and the science, what we call science, the gift passed down over thousands of years. And there are three details that are necessary to sail without modern European navigation tools. The course setting, which you just established, you wait until you're in exactly the right spot. This would be tradition and knowledge. Maintaining the course and making landfall. How did they maintain the course once out of sight of the starting point or of any land? How did they do it, Professor?
Well, that was most fundamentally through the stars. So they would look at stars as they were rising above the horizon, and they would provide points of orientation, and they could follow the particular stars that were relevant. But of course, there's a point where that star becomes too high in the sky to provide any useful bearing. So it's not a question of a single star, it's a question of understanding the constellations and picking up, as it were, the next set of stars that emerge. But there was a very subtle body of knowledge that went along with all of this, because if there were prevailing currents, they would, as it were, push your canoe sideways out of that course, even if you sustained your orientation towards that particular star. So navigators had to understand the seasonal currents, they had to understand the movements of water, they had to understand the strength of wind at any particular time, and they would therefore compensate for that drift off course by shifting their orientation slightly to compensate.
The example you give, the wonderful example is, and I do the best I can with the names of the islands, Woli Ai to Olomaro. The navigation requires you to know where an in-between island is, Faro Lep, but you never see Faro Lep. You just maintain the course on the basis of the star at the right time of the year being over Faro Lep. This is dead reckoning as I've never heard it, Professor. Was this new to the Europeans when they learned this, that you could sail this way?
This understanding on the part of Europeans of indigenous navigational systems really only emerged quite gradually. In the 18th century, when navigators such as Cook realized that Polynesians had the capacity to sail over great distances, it was recognized that they sailed on the basis of a knowledge of the stars. But the detail of that science, of that philosophy, really, because there are, in a sense, abstract models of geography that underpin the understanding, really only emerged after the Second World War, when people, anthropologists and others, went to the trouble of talking closely with islanders in various parts of Micronesia, in the Caroline Islands particularly, who sustained that knowledge at that time, despite all of the changes over the course of colonization, the loss of population, the disruption, Christianity, Second World War, and so on. Remarkably, there were people in Micronesia into the 1960s and 70s who had sustained traditional knowledge, who were able to hand it on to a new generation who had renewed interest in the art of crossing the water, and they helped disseminate that knowledge again, among others such as Hawaiians.
The challenge is, how did they do it? And that is the subject matter in the new book, Voyagers, The Settlement of the Pacific, by Professor Nicholas Thomas of Cambridge University. When we come back to the beginning, well, not the beginning, but certainly from the mainland across Melanesia, Micronesia, all the way to Polynesia, a common culture from pottery. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.